if you have a difficult time keeping New Year's resolutions, taking direction from a boss at work, making time for yourself, or you just ask too many questions, you might fall into one of four very different personality tendencies.
And our next guest says understanding what makes each of these tendencies unique can help make people be happier and lead more productive lives.
Gretchen Rubin joins us now. She writes about happiness and human nature. Her podcast is called Happier. Her latest book is The Four Tendencies, the indispensable personality profiles that reveal how to make your life better and other people's lives better too. Gretchen, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
So we've got these personality types, Gretchen, and I got to say, I'm usually skeptical when people have these personality types that are going to tell us all about who we are and so on. But yours is really specific. You're just measuring really our personalities as far as getting stuff done and making changes in our lives. Can you talk about that?
Right. You're exactly right. This is very narrow. What these four tendencies tell you is how a person responds to expectations. And we all face two kinds of expectations: outer expectations, you know, the expectations that come from the outside, like a work deadline or a request from a friend, and then our own inner expectations, what we expect from ourselves. We want to keep a New Year's resolution. We want to get back into practicing guitar. And so whether you're an upholder, a questioner, obliger, or rebel, all that that tells you is how do you respond to expectations.
Did you have kind of a eureka moment for this way of thinking about this?
You know, I had noticed so many patterns. Like, one of the most striking was a friend who said, "I don't understand it. When I was in high school, I was on the track team, and I never missed track practice, so why can't I go running now?" And I was like, well, why? I had been noticing all these patterns, and then finally one day, I was looking down at my to-do list, you know, just sitting in front of my computer, and the word just flashed into my mind, expectations. And I realized that that was really at the heart of a bunch of patterns that I had noticed, but I couldn't really figure out how they fit together.
So what matters is who has the expectations and how we react to them. Now, let me see if I've read your book right. That person who did great on staying on schedule in track but couldn't get motivated on their own, are they an obliger?
Yes. Bing,
right.
Bing, bing.
Boom.
Yes.
So let's talk about the obliger type. What is that?
And this is the biggest tendency. This is the one that the largest number of people fit into for both men and women. And obligers are people who readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. So exactly as you said, my friend, when she had a team and a coach waiting for her, she had no trouble showing up. But when she was just trying to go running on her own, she struggled. That is the obliger tendency.
And I want to go through the other tendencies now. The upholder. They're the one you can count on to get stuff done no matter what, it sounds like.
Yeah, upholders readily meet outer and inner expectations. So they want to meet other people's expectations, but their expectations for themselves are just as important.
And then there's the questioner.
Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they think it makes sense. So they make everything an inner expectation. If it meets their standard, they'll do it. If it fails their standard, they will resist. They typically don't like anything arbitrary, inefficient, unjustified. They always want to know, why should I?
And then finally, there's the rebel.
So the rebels are people who resist outer and inner expectations alike. They want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. If you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. Typically, they don't even want to tell themselves what to do. Like, they don't sign up for a class every Saturday because they don't know what they're going to want to do on Saturday.
And you say it's not like one of these is the good one and the other ones are the bad one. They all have their ups and downs.
Exactly. Each has strengths and weaknesses. Each tendency has people in it who are highly successful and also big losers. It's not a matter of that one is better than the other. When you look at the people who are the happiest, the healthiest, the most productive, and the most creative, they're the people who have figured out how to harness the strength of their tendency, but then also how to offset the weaknesses and limitations of their tendency so they can get the life they want.
We'll get into that in a bit because that's really the crux of your book. How do we manage ourselves, our personality type? But let's start with, how do we figure out which one of these we are?
Well, there's a quiz you can take online, happiercast.com/quiz. It's a very simple, free, easy quiz. More than a million people now have taken this quiz. But a lot of times people can tell just from that brief description. Like, they get it, you know? You sort of realize, like, oh, well, when I think back on my life, like, yeah, whenever any something made sense to me, I could do it. But when, you know, somebody gave me a dumb assignment that I thought was a big waste of my time, I had no trouble saying no, even though the teacher yelled at me. Or upholders are often told that they're too rigid. Questioners are often told they ask too many questions. Obligers often say things like, why is it that I can meet everybody else's priorities, but I can't meet my priorities for myself? And with rebels, people are often complaining, like, why don't you ever do anything I ask you to do? So those are some tells.
We're talking about expectations and motivation with Gretchen Rubin. Her new book is called The Four Tendencies. And this can be really important. I think about, and I think you give the example, but a doctor's office. A doctor says, hey, quit smoking.
Yes.
And the upholder is going to say, okay.
Yeah.
The questioner says, prove to me why. The rebel says, don't tell me what to do. The same statement is going to work differently for different people. So we kind of have to try to tailor it, whether we're talking about a health message or a work message or whatever. It's really important who the audience is for that message.
Absolutely, 100%. When you see that someone's not getting with the program, like whether it's you yourself or you're dealing with someone else, how you would communicate with them to try to convince them or to bring them along would be radically different depending on who they are. Because, right, for a rebel saying, well, you have to do this, this is doctor's orders, we all desperately want you to quit smoking, that's not going to work for them. For a rebel, you'd say something more like, you don't want to be addicted to nicotine. You want to be free from cravings. You don't want to be controlled by big tobacco companies with their fancy packages. You don't want people to tell you where you can stand and, oh, you can't go to this restaurant and you can't stand in this doorway. You want to be free. You want to make choices. Absolutely. When you know the tendencies, you can communicate much more effectively because you can hone in on the message that's going to resonate most deeply with that tendency.
And not only might something not work, I mean, I've seen studies of public health campaigns in the past that say, yeah, for some people, these things backfire. I mean, if the message is really targeted perfectly to a few of these groups, it might actually drive the other group to the wrong behavior.
No, absolutely. One thing that rebels often say is they hate that sign, you know, and you see them everywhere. Thank you for not smoking. Thank you for not speeding. Somebody said, if I see a sign that says thank you for not speeding, it makes me want to speed up because I don't want you to think, like, I'm not doing it because you told me to. Right. So, exactly. There could be counterproductive. Or, like, accountability. Outer accountability is crucial for obligers. And so something like, oh, you know, and a nurse is going to call you once a week and check up on you, that could be super helpful for an obliger. But for a rebel, it might make them resist altogether. And a questioner might say, like, they might welcome it. They might say, oh, this is going to make it easier. Or they could be like, why are you wasting my time with all these phone calls? This doesn't make any sense to me. So you would want to explain, like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this once a week? Why are we checking up on you? Why are we telling you to take it with food? Why are we telling you to do it in the morning? Why? They need those robust justifications.
Now, I took the quiz, and I got to say, even though my workplace joke catchphrase is, the producers know this, don't tell me what to do, I came out evenly split among everything but rebel. And that makes me think, like, what about people who are bridging multiple groups here?
Well, you know, all of us share a little bit of it. Nobody wants to be totally controlled by others, so we're all a little bit rebel. Nobody wants to do something that's a stupid waste of time, so we're all a little bit questioner. Mm-hmm. All of us will sacrifice something that's important to us in order to do something for someone else if it's important enough, so we're all a little bit obliger. But I do think people have a core tendency, which is sort of their instinctual reaction to an expectation. But that said, all of the tendencies overlap with other tendencies. So if you're a questioner, well, questioners are like upholders and that they both readily meet inner expectations. And questioners are like rebels and that they both resist outer expectations. So if you're a questioner, you could be more on the upholder side or more on the rebel side. So like my husband is an upholder who tips, is a questioner who tips to upholder. And I'm an upholder, so that's good for me because he's kind of closer to me. And I think that means that we see the world more similarly because we share that.
Let's talk about the friend of yours that started this off, the person who could exercise on the track team, couldn't make the time to do it on their own dime, on their own time. What kind of advice do you have for that kind of obliger to get that internal motivation when they usually just function better with external motivation?
So that is absolutely a crucial question. And I think when rebels focus on trying to have inner motivation, making themselves a priority, making time for themselves, that does not work. It is not effective. What is effective is outer accountability. And outer accountability, there's a million ways to build an outer accountability. So what would I say to that woman now? I'd say, sign up for a class where they take attendance. Work out with a trainer one-on-one. Work out with a friend who's going to be annoyed if you don't show up. Take your dog for a run, and your dog's going to be really disappointed if he doesn't get the run that he loves so much, and he's going to tear up the furniture. You know, go do a 5K for a charity that you really value, and they're not going to make as much money if you don't do that run. Think of your duty to be a role model for somebody else. There's a million ways to create outer accountability once you realize that that is what you need. If you want to read more, join a book group. Like, it's always for obligers about creating outer accountability, even for inner expectations. That is what works. It's quick and easy. It's a very straightforward fix, and that is what works.
We're talking to author Gretchen Rubin right now about the four personality types she outlines in her latest book. It's called The Four Tendencies. She says we can learn a lot about how to get ourselves motivated and how to motivate others, too.
And you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. Do any of these personality types sound like you? What motivates you to get something done or make a change in your life? And what doesn't? We all have those moments. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're continuing our conversation with Gretchen Rubin. She's with us to talk about her latest book, The Four Tendencies, the Indispensable Personality Profiles that Reveal How to Make Your Life Better and Other People's Lives Better, too. And she's breaking down the four personality types in her book, those being the upholder, the questioner, the rebel, and the obliger.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Based on what you've heard, what personality type do you think you are? What motivates you to do something? What doesn't work? What motivates you to do the exact opposite? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or check out the Ideas Network Facebook page. There's a link to a quiz. You can learn a little more about yourself there. We'll go next to Charlene with us in La Crosse. Charlene, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask, Charlene?
I wanted to ask, actually, about the personality type or the type of rebel. After listening to the descriptions, it sounds like that's what my husband is. And I just wanted to see how could I approach him differently when I'm asking for things with his help around the house. You know, she talked about, like, the doctor giving orders to quit smoking. I found that just asking him outright to, or telling him, you know, I need you to do these kind of things, doesn't really work, and kind of makes him a little bit more stubborn on doing it. So wondering if she has any suggestions.
And Charlene, I think you're probably the only person in the world dealing with this situation. No,
right?
I'm kidding. Gretchen, this is all over the place, isn't it? What do you suggest, Gretchen, for Charlene?
Well, one thing that's interesting is when there's a rebel who's paired up, either in a relationship or at work, it's almost always with an obliger. So that's a very dominant tendency. So if you're paired up with a rebel, it's very likely that you're an obliger. So how do you get a rebel to do what you want? Well, it is hard, because if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. So one thing is to remember they can do anything they want to do. They can do anything they choose to do, and they often like to express their identity. And so if you remind them of their identity, of wanting to be a considerate member of the household, of wanting to do what's fair and what's their share, that will often, when you do this, it makes me feel like I can count on you. When you do this, like, it makes us feel like we're a team. They may choose to do it out of love for you, and so to remind them of their identity. Also, information consequences choice. Give the rebel the information they need. Tell them the consequences of their action, and then let them choose. So you could say something like, well, you know, we need to clean out the guest room because your parents are going to come stay with us in 2 weeks, and next week we're going to be out of town. So we have to do it this weekend, or we're not going to have time to do it. And if we don't, then your parents are going to be staying in a room that's full of stuff. That's information consequences choice. But what you have to be willing to do is to let negative consequences fall. You can't stay up until 3 a.m. then cleaning out the guest room, because then there's no problem. There's no negative consequences. You have to let negative consequences fall, and that can be difficult. And another thing is not to remind, not to nudge. The more you remind somebody or ask somebody to do that, the more you ignite the spirit of resistance. So let them do it in their own way, in their own time. Let them be spontaneous. Never say to a rebel something like, well, wouldn't it make more sense to do this in the morning? No, no, no. If they feel like working on the porch right now and it's midnight, that's great. You feel like doing it now? I'm not going to get in your way. Do it when you want to do it in your own way. Somebody who's married to a rebel said, it took me 20 years to realize that the less I ask for, the more I get. It is very hard. Wrap your mind around this, but saying like, you need to do this, or you said that you would do this, or I need you to do this, it's like that ignites that spirit of resistance.
Yeah, it sounds like that being ready to put up with that negative consequence a couple times, because maybe, I don't know, the timber collection is still sitting in the guest room when mom and dad show up.
You have to let that happen. Over and over, rebels have said, if you insulate, if you protect, if you rush to the rescue to protect a rebel from negative consequences, then there's no reason to do anything different. Then that works great. Because it's like, I did what I wanted, and there was no, like, everything worked out fine, right? Everything was fine. Like, what's the big deal? It's like, yeah, because, like, you know, so you have to be willing to put up with those negative consequences. And unfortunately, if you're married to somebody, a lot of times those negative consequences might blow back on you, too. If you don't pay the cable bill, well, I'm the one who gets her cable cut off. But you have to be willing to sort of let that happen or pay the cable bill yourself. Or what many rebels do is pay if they have either automate things like automate bill paying or pay for somebody to do chores that they don't want to do. You don't want to do it? Fine. Then we're going to have to pay somebody to do it.
All right. Good luck, Charlene. We're all pulling for you.
Yeah.
We're talking to Gretchen Rubin.
That's
author,
a common question.
Author of the book, The Four Tendencies, looking at the different ways people are motivated by themselves or others or nothing at all. Jeff is with us next at 800-642-1234. Jeff, calling from Onalaska. Jeff, hi.
Hey, just wondering, as opposed to some of the other personality tests, like the color tests and things, where would this maybe be a practical application to use as opposed to some of the other tests that are out there? And then kind of a follow-up, when you are using some of these techniques with the other personality types, what happens if you kind of get busted that you're trying to sell them and they figure out which one and the issues that that can address?
Jeff, thanks. Thanks for calling. A couple good questions there. First, as you mentioned earlier, Gretchen, this is more particular kind of than your Myers-Briggs and the color tests and things like that. But where does your where do your tendencies fit on that landscape?
You know, I'm a big fan of personality frameworks. I love having a vocabulary and a different way of thinking about patterns in behavior. And I think each of them has their own nuance and their own power. And I think you lose that nuance if you try to say, like, this corresponds to that or this equals that. So I think, like, let them all stand on their own and kind of put them together in however is the most illuminating for you. But I don't think it really works to try to create equivalencies.
And then do you want people to know that you're trying to use their tendencies for or against them?
Well, that's a very good question. I think it's helpful. I think the more that you can have a shorthand to say, like, hey, I know this is probably really bugging you because you're a questioner, or, you know, do we need to set this up, you know, better for you as an advisor? I mean, to me, I think that would be helpful. But I have to say, I can imagine situations where people might not like that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it. And this, a lot of this rings true to me. I'm a little like your friend on the track team, though I wasn't on the track team either. But when it comes to trying to get motivated for exercise, like the fitness tracker with my family members is helping motivate me, getting a free treadmill in the basement. So it was so pathetic if I couldn't even do that little amount of exercise. That shame got me to overcome my lack of internal motivation. This, when people do this, they can actually make productive changes, it sounds like.
No, they really can. And I think for a lot of people, there's a lot of relief because they think, like, well, you know what, it's not that there's something wrong with me. It's not that I lack willpower, I don't have self-control, or I don't have to feel bad because something's easier, comes easily to my brother-in-law or my sweetheart, and it's hard for me. It's like, whatever tendency you are, there's a lot of people in the same boat as you. There are a lot of strategies for dealing with it. Like, you don't need to change. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just a question of how do we set things up so that you get where you want to go. And I think for a lot of people, especially people who have tried and failed numerous times, seeing, like, oh, okay, this is the thing that's going to unlock whatever behavior it is that I want to follow, there's a real relief to that.
I wanted to ask about, we haven't spent a lot of time on the questioners, and let's talk about, like, a manager dealing with a questioner. This person drives me nuts. Every time I say I want to do something, they're asking why and for details and motivation and justification. What do you tell a manager in that situation?
Well, you're exactly right. There's a lot of strengths of being around questioners because they're the ones that are keeping people focused on efficiency and justification and why are we doing this at all? And those are really important questions to ask, especially in the workplace. But they often will drain and overwhelm other people with their questions. They can seem obstructionist. They can seem stubborn. They can seem like bottlenecks, if you have a manager, you can start feeling like someone's undermining your authority or questioning your judgment, or it's just not, like not a team player. That's something that questioners often get. And so I think one of the things that's good about the four tendencies is it allows you to realize there's nothing personal here. This person is not undermining my authority. They're not attacking me. They're not trying to slow down this process. They really just need to have their questions answered. And in fact, if I'm giving a presentation to a whole group of people, maybe I'll say, hey, if you've heard enough about why we're switching to this different software program, feel free to go back to your desk. If you want to stay here and talk about it some more, I'm here to answer your questions so that other people are free and don't have to, like, roll their eyes as the questioners keep asking the questions. But all these things, there are strengths and weaknesses, and there's many strengths to having a questioner. And sometimes when you're like, well, the upside comes with a downside. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it kind of drives me crazy. I don't have to take it personally. This person is this way all over the place. It has nothing to do with me. Then you can manage it in a calmer way. It doesn't feel so emotionally loaded or as personal.
It's a good place to leave it. Gretchen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Gretchen Rubin. She's a podcaster and author. She's best known for The Happiness Project. We've been talking about her most recent book. It's called The Four Tendencies, the Indispensable Personality Profiles that Reveal How to Make Your Life Better and Other People's Lives Better, too.
And you can go to WPR.org to read an excerpt of the book and find a link to the quiz, which will help you determine your personality type if you're curious.